This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Jared Smith, betting analyst here at VSiN, filling in for Michael Lombardi. He'll be back this week. Fun first hour that we had. Thank you to Will Hill, VSiN contributor, host of the Should Have Bet More podcast. He joined us in the last segment, gave us some college basketball plays. He liked Seton Hall today. Also went with Michigan in the game against Ohio State, although doesn't get the pub.
Not quite as much.
Big noon tip-off, maybe? No. None of that going on.
I'd rather see the Iowa-Ohio State game on the women's side for big noon tip-off.
That is a really big game. Caitlin Clark chasing history. I'm sure there's some fun props out there and some maybe off-the-grid places that you can go ahead and dabble with if you want to do that. He also likes the first half under in Maryland and Indiana.
Yeah, I just bet that.
You fired that into the account?
I like Will's approach with first halves, especially in the tournament. I will not bet a full game under in the tournament. I just won't do it.
Because there's extra fouling. If you think you've seen fouling in the regular season.
It's truly madness. First halves, and I know our sports gambling podcast pals, Ryan Kramer's made a living of this over the years. The first half unders in the tournaments. I think the same could be applied to the conference tournaments. And absolutely certain teams like Maryland, which is like the under team in the Big Ten. So that's of the three plays that Will gave out, I think that's the one that I'm really, really intrigued with.
Those first half unders for like in the conference tournaments, do you see those hit more so with the teams that are like, okay, this is our season on the line. We have to go ahead and get to the next round to like build a resume and all that stuff. Cause like, I always wonder like if it's Duke versus North Carolina in the ACC title game in the conference tournament in about a week or so.
That game's got some juice to it.
It's got juice, but they're not going to be like fouling like lives are on the line.
I don't know if that's the profile. I think the one thing that I like with first half unders when I know it's a unique venue, and I also like the late games because you've been sitting around all day and the late games too are always later than the scheduled times. It's usually by an hour, sometimes longer, depending on how many games are before.
All it takes is one game to go to OT in the early slate and it's over.
One really long game to screw up the whole schedule. And I've worked those conference tournaments before during my Sun Belt days and they're not fun. You're sitting around in the stands. You're like waiting in the back. You're eating a banana. You're trying to stay loose. It's unique of an experience. And the same thing can be said for the March Madness games where it's the later games. But they do a better job these days of splitting those pods up. Whereas the conference tournaments, it's like 10 teams in one location. So it can be a little wonky sometimes. I think that's where the first half unders come into more value, I think, where the number's not fully accounting the venue shifts. And the, you know, just the overall lethargy of sitting around all day.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a different setup than you typically get since you're not on your campus. Yeah. You travel to some sort of location that's a neutral site location. Well, some conference tournaments are given
some to the campus sites.
Yeah, some
Patriot
are those campus
League's
sites.
Big.
Yeah.
And that's a big handicap for me with the Patriot League. They're my favorite leagues to bet because team like Colgate that's already clinched the one seed, they don't care. But a team like Lehigh yesterday, I took Lehigh +3.5. I was fortunate to cover. They lost by 3. But Lehigh's still fighting for a home game in the conference tournament. Like, that is life or death type of stuff, where Colgate's just waiting for the conference tournament to start. They're going to get home games throughout. So that's where you can also find edges in the regular season as well, where the motivation is just vastly different.
100%. And we'll get used to all this talk coming up here in about, I mean, like, what, 3 days or so? Once these conference tournaments really start to crank up.
They start next week. Absolutely.
This coming week here. So the madness is here. We got Arch Madness. And all
I love
stuff.
It. It's such a great name.
It's a really great
nickname. They trademarked that for good reason.
Yes, they should have. Because it's a really, really good nickname. Shout out to the Missouri Valley, correct?
The Mo
Valley out there in St. Louis, the gateway of the West.
Oh, yeah.
We do have a fun second hour, though, on deck for you guys as well here. About 40 minutes from now, Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst, will join us to give out his plays here in the NBA today. Also, some overarching thoughts here. I want to ask JVT about the Boston Celtics. And Jared, I want to ask you about the Boston Celtics to tip off this
JVT's
hour number
JVT's probably got some smarter
two.
Assessment than me, but I will give you my opinion.
So the Celtics later on today, 12:30 Eastern, 3 o'clock Pacific time, 3:30, I guess, Eastern time, 12:30 Pacific. Celtics are hosting the Golden State Warriors.
What a game.
Boston is out to an 11-point favorite at home. Now, when you've watched the Boston Celtics so far play this year, it kind of makes sense seeing a number that big just because of how good they are, especially at home where they've only lost three games all season. Totals at 230.5. And this Boston team, which I have questions about in the postseason, but in the regular season, this is a team that at the All-Star break, I said, you know what? I'm betting over 63.5 adjusted wins. I'm just going to do it because I think that this team is going to win like 66 games. And so far, they've yet to lose since the All-Star break. They've won 10 straight games, 47-12.
Wow.
Are we approaching maybe the peak of their market here? Because it feels like, man, Steph Curry's getting 11 points on national television.
Yeah.
It feels like you'd want to be interested in Golden State in this spot or at least pass the game.
Yeah, I mean, Golden State's record against the spread is better than Boston this year.
Yeah.
So, you know, that just shows you right there. If you want to talk about comparing the value of where the numbers have been this year, Golden State's been better against the spread. And the last time these two teams played was an absolute barn burner out west. Mm-hmm. Overtime, Warriors won by 6. So maybe there's something about Golden State that just meshes well against this Celtics defense. There's not a lot of teams that score 130 against Boston. So I think that, and I know it was overtime, but still, it obviously was a high scoring game even before overtime. If it got to that level of a total there, that one went way over the total. I would guess this one probably afternoon, East Coast, West Coast team going east. Like it, to me, it gets a little more of sleepy start vibes, but anytime you've got Steph Curry, I mean, he had 33 in that game. That was back in December. So it was a significant time ago. I don't want to take too much from where the teams were at that point in time. But listen, this is a Warriors team that's fighting for playoff positioning. So I think there's a lot of really sharp reasons why you could, you know, make a case that Golden State may be a little undervalued because of their ATS numbers, maybe Boston because of just how many games in a row they've won and how dominant they've looked and how they're being chalkily priced in the market. You can say maybe a little bit of overvalue, but I'd be lying if I said I've watched a ton of either team this year to give you any X's and O's type assessment. I'm interested to hear what JBT has to say a little later in the hour.
Oh, 100%. I think the one bugaboo for this Boston Celtics team that people have talked about is like, okay, once it gets to clutch time, how do they can they get efficient offense? Because their thing has always been, hey, we're going to drive and kick, and kick and shoot a bunch of threes.
They don't care who has the hot hand. It's whoever has the hot hand that day.
And they play the math game of we're just going to shoot a ton of threes and we'll live with the variance. Yeah. Like if we make them, great. If we miss them, oh, well,
and like the Alabama of the NBA
at a more efficient level,
at a more efficient level.
But when you take a look at to win the Eastern Conference, I mean, this is plus 105.
I can't like, do it.
It's such a short number.
That number's going to be there for another month.
It's like,
on that. Maybe someone gets hurt and you get a little bit of a dip.
I think that number's kind of crazy, just given the fact that Boston, they've made it to the finals with Tatum and Brown and those guys. And they are better this year than they were that year a couple of years ago when they ultimately won the Eastern Conference. And they probably should have won the Eastern Conference last year.
But they have to win 12 games.
But they got to win 12 games.
So like, there's going to be a spot where they maybe go down 1-0 in a series. And like that happens all the time where the dominant team loses game one of a series.
And maybe you go down 0-3.
Well, I think that might be the kiss of death.
It happened last year.
I know, that's crazy, right? And then they came back and tied and then couldn't. And then that was such a unique series last year. I think Boston will be much more prepared early in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, and I think Joe Mazzulla, who like I've been championing him, and I'm not just saying this to pump my own ticket. Like I bet to Mazzulla coach of the year just because I figured if this team wins 66, 67 games, I get what Mark Dagnall's doing at OKC, Chris Finch at Minnesota, and all those guys. But it's like 66, 67 wins is ridiculous. We're talking about an all-time, like a top 10 regular season in NBA history. Like that has to be rewarded in some form or fashion. But Mazzulla this year, you would feel would be more equipped to handle the postseason than he was last year when he was sort of thrust into the role after they had to fire Ime Udoka. So it's like, I feel like there's more working for Boston this year. But I also think, too, if Philadelphia were to get healthy and get Joel Embiid back, say what you will about Embiid in the postseason. I get it. Like he is a guy that is under investigation once it comes to May and June and that time. But they're still a really good team now with Nick Nurse at head coach. And Milwaukee also, a team that has been much maligned.
That's my choice.
They've been much maligned throughout this season. They've found something here post All-Star break. We all have our Doc Rivers jokes and all the excuses that he likes to make, but they've seemed to have found something in the past couple of weeks or at least. Yeah,
Damian Lillard is who they found. He's the best. Like, he's the best player on the... Oh, we just forgot that he's...
But
like,
maybe let's run some more high pick and roll.
Yeah, like, he just forgot. Like, we all forgot that this dude took the Blazers to the Western Conference Finals, like, what, 8 years? Like really recently, within the last like six or 7 years. So I think that is a team where they're not going to be successful because of Doc, but they've got the pieces to make a run. And I don't know if they're good enough to beat Boston in a seven-game series, but I know they have the pieces to beat Boston in a seven-game series. I just think Doc Rivers gives that, like, the coaching edge is, and I don't know, I don't watch the NBA enough to really make this assessment. Like, in college basketball, we talk a lot about coaches. Coaching matters. Adjustments matter. I don't think it matters as much in the NBA, but I still think good coaches can still have impacts on games, especially long series where one or two games play out in a certain way. And then you get a two, and in the NBA, a 3-day break between games sometimes, and you can make a critical adjustment that changes the tenure of a series. Doc Rivers is not going to be that guy. But they might be talented enough to beat Boston. So I think they're a very interesting. I think they're the only other team I'm interested in the East besides the Celtics.
The talent, I think, is what always kind of draws me to Milwaukee. Because let's say we have the Celtics and the Bucks in the series. Best player in the series is Giannis, no question.
Yeah, and I think the second best might be
Second best, there's an argument. Like, I would probably lean towards Tatum.
Sure.
But the third best, 1,000%, is Lillard.
And there's an argument that Dame at his best is better than Tatum. So
It's like you're talking about having the two of the three best players in the series, 100 out of 100, and obviously the best player in Giannis.
Yeah.
It makes it a little uncomfortable.
In a seven-game series and not just one roll of the dice,
Which is like usually the best player wins in a seven-game series. So it's I think it's fascinating for this Eastern Conference just given how good Boston is in the regular season and what it's doing to their prices. But come postseason basketball is much different than the regular season. But we'll get another data point on the Celtics later on this afternoon as they take on the Golden State Warriors. All right, we'll play some QB matchmaker coming up next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Baseball is back, and what better way to hit off the grapefruit and cactus leagues than with VSiN's free MLB betting primer. This primer will tell you how to bet on spring training and continue all season long with our VSiN experts' World Series futures analysis. Our free MLB betting primer has basic baseball betting advice for those new to betting MLB, the sabermetrics for you data-driven folks. You can go ahead and bet smarter all year. VSiN.com/guide to get the MLB betting primer. VSiN.com/guide today. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Jared Smith. I did not contribute to our MLB betting primer, but I did win a spring training bet when I went out to Scottsdale last weekend. Shout out to the Colorado Rockies. Got them +138 on the money line against Arizona.
I mean, listen, you're basically a
went into enemy territory and came out with money.
You're a regular sharp in the spring training world. So spring training tout
is actually my username.
underscore
big units.
Big units. Whale bets.
Of course.
I think spring training is becoming a very interesting betting landscape. I'm seeing a lot of people on social media really get into it. Personally, not my cup of tea.
So I was going to ask you, because Mike Palm yesterday told me that the Yerfy Nerfy is like big in spring training. A lot of people have been betting that. and you're like the Yerfy Nerfy guy.
I waste so much time during the regular season. I can't include
training. This is all valuable stuff.
I know. So I think the stuff with the Yerfy Nerfies in the spring training that gets me off is I don't like seeing like stories that come out afterwards that this pitcher wants to work on 20 straight curveballs. Yeah. And I'm like, why did I just bet him in the first inning to not give up a run when he was throwing 20 straight curveballs in the first inning? Because that was all he was trying to work on.
Yeah, he's working on stuff.
You are asking for trouble unless you know that. Like, unless you know that, you're asking for trouble betting the spring. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of really sharp people that are very good at finding information. Preseason NFL, same thing. Like, if you are a news hound with that stuff, you're going to find an edge. But if you have a life, you might struggle to find an edge, because I'd like to know if the starting pitcher I'm betting a Yerfy on is going to throw fastballs every single pitch for 20 straight, because eventually one of them is going to get hit out.
Yeah. No, it's equivalent to the NFL preseason or NFL X, as some people call it. It's like the XFL.
You know, those lesser leagues where like you really have to be in tune to what's happening behind the scenes.
Low limit information markets. That's what those are, honestly. But yeah, it was a whole lot of fun out there going to a spring training game. Nice. I'd never been to one before.
Cactus League.
Yeah, Cactus League. Whole lot of fun out there in Arizona. But let's get to our game that our producer Elliot Bowman has put together here. A little QB matchmaker. Now, the rules for this game, because they do come with rules.
Every game comes with rules.
We cannot pick the same team for multiple players. That's the only rule. We're going to go down the quarterbacks. It can't be like, oh, this guy will be a fit for this team and also this team and also this team. It's got to be different teams. So we will go down the list. And our first quarterback, the quarterback we discussed in hour number one, Justin Fields, who wears the number one. For which team will Justin Fields take his first snap in 2024? Expectations are Fields will be traded. And right now at DraftKings, the overwhelming prohibitive favorite in the market, his hometown, Atlanta Falcons, minus 270 to be the next team for Justin Fields. Chicago Bears, his incumbent team, 3-1. Pittsburgh Steelers plus 350. The Raiders at 10-1. I'll give you the first crack. Where is Fields taking that first snap in 2024?
It does seem like there's a lot of momentum for Atlanta. That is the logical choice. You mentioned the hometown. You mentioned the new regime as well. Atlanta makes sense to kind of refurbish and bring in a quarterback that, let's be honest, I think Desmond Ridder and Justin Fields, I think their games are kind of similar. A little more running-based quarterbacks, trying to work on the throwing side. So I guess that's kind of an interesting launching point. But I still go back to the Raiders and Getsy. And just they bring over Luke Getsy from Chicago to be the new OC. And he's going to have a lot of autonomy because Pierce is a defensive-minded coach. So I don't know this for sure, but if Getsy does, he come out publicly and said he really likes Justin Fields and really respected the way he went about his business last year, that could just be, being nice after the
pleasantries.
Fact. Sure. But if he believes that, the Raiders are like, to me, the team that is in we're a little too far down in the draft to maybe get a quarterback. We need to be aggressive. And they desperately need a quarterback. So I think they picked 13th. In the draft.
I'm looking it up right now.
Yeah, and so you're not getting the top four. Maybe if McCarthy really is the faller and where all the stuff about him is smoke, maybe he does fall to 13. But I think 13 is a stretch. There's a lot of teams that need a quarterback between, 1 and 2 and 13. So I think there's an opportunity for the Raiders because of their cap space, because of their roster as being very quarterback thin. It's really just Aiden O'Connell. And I think Hoyer, come on, you're making a move at quarterback, and it's probably going to be a veteran, at least a guy that's had some snaps. So I think that makes a ton of sense to me. I just don't know how much Getsy likes Justin Fields. So I would go Raiders 10-1 would be my choice.
Yeah, Raiders are picking 13th overall, so they might, I don't want to say get shut out of the quarterbacks, because I think we'll see those three guys go. Then I think after that, who knows where these guys fall. Maybe there's a fourth guy in that top 10 with J.J. McCarthy. A lot of people have seemed to say that the NFL higher on him than maybe Twitter or the outside verse on J.J. McCarthy.
I've heard almost too much of that over the last week, actually, for me to believe it.
That's honestly really good because it's very.
Last year it was Will Levis.
It's very.
Everyone loves Will Levis.
It's Levis like.
Absolutely.
It's like the league is higher on Levis. Twitter has it wrong. How about Levis goes first overall on Friday as a second round pick? I think that was a big thing. And like you said, maybe it's a little bit too much. Somebody's trying to sell us something that's actually false. I will go with the Atlanta Falcons. It's the conventional one for me.
I think that would be the only other team I would pick.
Though. I think Fields being in that run game with Bijan Robinson and Algier. We'll see if they bring Cordero Patterson back. But you keep him indoors there on that fast track with his athleticism. Maybe you can go ahead and work on the passing game with some of those weapons. Kyle Pitts, Drake London. They've been trying to get those guys going since they've drafted him. Could be a fun young team there that's exciting, led by Raheem Morris, first year as a Falcons head coach, first time head coach. He had that stint in Tampa. Next quarterback, Russell Wilson.
Yeah, oh my goodness.
Which team will he take his first snap? The favorite, Pittsburgh Steelers minus 225, the Raiders plus 550, Broncos Falcons at 6-1. Patriots plus 850, Vikings 10-1.
So this is where your expertise working with Michael for the last couple months can help me, because I'll be honest, I have not kept up to date with as much Russell Wilson Broncos saga. Is there an issue? Like, is it really that much of a long shot that he's not back in Denver? Like, is that completely gone up? Because the way I viewed that situation last year was he still has a little bit left in the tank. It was another new system and another new situation. And he didn't play. He wasn't terrible last year. He just wasn't elite Russell Wilson from Seattle. And I didn't know if, like, they had, are they out on the outs? Is there a contract thing there?
There's a contract thing. So that was behind the benching there. And I actually want to play the Sean Payton soundbite, Elliot. I don't know if we have that one ready for you. Looks like we're getting that one ready, because just the way that Sean Payton has talked about the quarterback position,
it's, they're moving on.
This to me feels like a move on. I think it would be a pretty big long shot if he ends up coming back. Here's what Sean Payton had to say about what quarterback position has been like in Denver and what could be going forward.
I saw this like humorous meme the other day where there's a Bronco fan with a shirt on, and there was like eight quarterbacks names with a cross through it, you know, and he's drinking the quarterback Kool-Aid, and our job is to make sure that this next one, you know, doesn't have a line through it.
This next one.
Yeah, no, that's pretty definitive.
Yep.
Yeah, so
sounds like a guy who's ready to move on.
So you could take Russell Wilson, you can take the Broncos off that board, because that's not happening after. I did not see that soundbite. I think the Falcons make sense because of what you were saying with the mobility. I mean, is New England that far out of the realm of possibility if they want to bring in a veteran quarterback? Because all we're hearing, and we were talking about this pre-show, oh, the Patriots love all three quarterbacks. Well, that is not true. There's no way they love all three of these top quarterbacks the same. You do not love all your children equally. It's just, you just don't. You just don't. There's always Jared a favorite.
Calling parents out.
There's always a favorite. My sister has three kids. It's ironic. She has three kids. I just saw them this week. I was in Florida for my birthday. She told me who the favorite was. She has a favorite. So the Patriots are going to, if they don't like the guy that falls to them, they could be a team, I think, that's intriguing at a quarterback move. Maybe the Raiders because of the divisional element, right? Like, I think the Raiders are making a splash. So I'll say Raiders.
I think, did you say Raiders for Fields
so
as well?
So I can't give them the both?
You can't give them both.
All right, fine.
Breaking
fine,
rules.
Fine. Patriots. Flag. Unsportsmanlike conduct. Patriots. I'll go Patriots.
Got to back them up 15 yards. I will say Raiders for Russell Wilson just because of, like, maybe there was a little bit of a revenge angle there, because the split has not been amicable between Russell Wilson and
clearly
the Denver Broncos.
Not. Like, clearly, like, missed the breakup.
Payton's ready to move on. And Russ, I mean, he was on the I Am Athlete podcast. Go look that up there, what he said about what the Broncos were trying to do to him contractually. They want him to waive all of his injury guarantees. He's like, no way in hell am I doing that. There was a lot. Yeah, there's been a lot on between Russell Wilson and the Broncos.
Broncos, take him on TV on this
Raiders country. Just kidding. But I do think the silver and black could be a good spot for Russell Wilson. We'll play some more QB Matchmaker on the other side. This is the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Put the VSiN experts to work for you and start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today. Get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. All you have to do is use promo code Lombardi. You're going to get the best bets. You're going to get the betting systems, the premium analysis, the 24/7 video access, and more importantly, the upcoming March Madness betting guide with bets for every game and round of the tournament. Once again, promo code Lombardi, $199, VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Jared Smith, who, unlike Roma Dunze, could land a plane safely.
But we can expand upon that.
About how you could run. It's all automated and all that stuff. So for those who don't know, Washington wide receiver Roma Dunze was asked about it at the combine if he could land a plane safely. He said, no, all souls would perish. And I say, hey, that's a young man that's very self-aware.
I agree.
You're saying that he's not giving himself enough credit, though, that we all should be able to land a plane, apparently?
Let's just leave it at this. My 5-year-old niece runs her iPad like she's like, you know, Tim Cook. Like she knows everything.
She invented
about
it.
Like, I think there's a technology gap with some of the older generations that maybe couldn't. But I have a friend who's a flight attendant, and she says it is very automated. Like, she went in the cockpit once, and the pilot was trying to like explain to her some of the things that went on. And she told me, like, yeah, like, I probably could do this if I had a little train. Like, it's not rocket science. Now, the hard part is you're probably scared out of your mind. Mm-hmm. So if you told me, if I had air traffic control in my ear and they said, look to your right, there's a panel, push this button, turn the knob here, I feel like I could handle that, but my hands are probably shaking because I'm scared out of my mind. It's the psychological part of it that I probably wouldn't be able to handle. The technological side of it, I think I'd be able to do it. I honestly do.
But even what you said, though, with your flight attendant friend said, like, once you have like a baseline training, like you're not just showing up today.
But you have time, though, because think about it. Autopilot, you have a few minutes. Air traffic control, get in my ear. It's like Mahomes, right? Give me the play. I want the play.
Yeah, but Mahomes has a lot of baseline training of how to play
that
football.
That is true, he does. That is fair.
You know what I mean?
He is a professional.
I ain't just showing up and being like, all right, let's go. Here I am, Captain Sully or whoever. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
you got to wear your captain's hat. Hey, I'd want to get those wings on the side of my jacket here, right?
Oh, it's a hilarious discussion, though. Yeah, but that's really the NFL combine. You never know what you're going to be asked.
You never know. I've gotten some weird interview questions. Someone's got a question. If you were you were the size of like a blueberry and you were placed at the bottom of a blender and you had 20 seconds to get out before the blender got turned on, how would you get out? That was the weirdest interview question I've ever gotten in my life. It was for a television job like 10 years ago.
I was going to say.
Random news director asked me that question.
If you were a blueberry?
Like the size of like a coin or like a berry.
Okay.
And you were
the
dropped
size.
Into the bottom of a blender and you're like, you're there and there's all the things. And you know the blender's going to turn on. You see the countdown clock. You got 10 seconds, 15 seconds. How do you get out?
What'd you say?
He's got to run. You got to climb.
You got to climb.
You got to climb.
Climbing ice cubes. Climbing the fruit.
Going. You just got to keep pushing. I don't know. It was like a psychological.
It was always
thing.
Like the like what animal would you be like? I don't know.
What's your worst? Yeah. What's your
biggest weakness?
Yeah, your biggest weakness. I work too hard.
I care too much. That's my biggest weakness. But speaking of self-awareness, we were talking about Russell Wilson in the last segment. He was on the I Am Athlete podcast with Brandon Marshall. Our producer Elliot and the crew put together a nice little compilation of what Russell Wilson was having to say, because Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos feel like they're headed towards this divorce. But Russell, though, he might want to salvage this thing. Here's what Russell Wilson had to say, though, when he was speaking with Brandon Marshall earlier this week.
I got more fire than ever, honestly, especially over the past 2 years of what I've gone through. Whether if it's in Denver or somewhere else, I hope it's in Denver. You know, I hope I get to finish there. I committed there, I wanted to be there. You know, I want to be there.
Hold on, you can go back to Denver, bro?
I can go back there.
You can play with Coach Payton again?
Yeah. For me, it's about winning. About winning. Over the next 5 years, I want to win too. I want to feel the chill of that trophy again. My mindset right now, where I am, and I'd love to be there, you know, love to win. And that's what I came there to do, is win more Super Bowls. And so if it's not there, though, I gotta go to a place that we're gonna win again.
The look on Russell Wilson's face when Brandon Marshall said, you can go back and play for Sean Payton, he's like, yeah. And then like has like a kind of like a sheepish grin where he's like, I think in his head, he's like, hell no, I don't wanna play for Sean Payton. But he's trying to say all the right things. I will stick with the Raiders for my pick for Russell Wilson's next snap, plus +550 over at DraftKings. Somehow Denver's 6-1. I think it's missing a zero.
I agree
on that one, honestly.
And the context of that interview, I love. So first of all, and the Kelsey stuff is also part of this. Like the interviews and the podcasts that we get from these athletes now, the access is immensely more than before. Yeah. It helps us a lot. I always say the hardest thing we do is get inside these guys' minds. You could see, and Brandon Marshall, by the way, is becoming a really good interviewer just based off of
great follow-ups.
Yes. And also, sometimes the best interview question is no question. You notice he just kind of let Russell pause and then continue, and he didn't jump in. And like that can be hard to learn, frankly, when you're talking to someone. Kind of let them, like I always say this, if you want to learn the truth, just stop talking and let the other person talk. Like, and Brandon did a good job there, because I think the body language of that interview with Brandon, you could tell the follow-up, he knew the underlying stuff. It was like he knew what was happening underneath the surface. Russell was being a little coy with his response, and he's like, you want to play for Coach Payton again? Like, you could tell based on that question, he knows that there's something going on there, and he's trying to needle it, trying to get 100%. It out, you know, and that is a credit. Brandon Marshall's, I mean, he should have one of these jobs, right? But
next Cronkite, many are asking.
Clearly, that is a very unique situation because of that contract stuff. Obviously, Russell has some personal issues going on behind the scenes with that situation, but yeah, it's obvious that there's probably a breakup happening here.
Kirk Cousins is the next guy who's a free agent, unrestricted, mind you. So any team could just offer Kirk Cousins the biggie bag. Huh? And if you wanted to, he could go ahead and leave in free agency. But right now at DraftKings, the overwhelming favorite is the incumbent Minnesota Vikings at minus 200. After that, though, it's Atlanta at plus 190. Patriots, Steelers, Raiders, 10-1. Broncos, 14-1.
If you're going
to
give me first pick here, I'll go chalk. I mean, this like, why besides the injury would Minnesota move away from him? Like, I unless they feel so passionately about whoever they're going to draft at, what, 11 somewhere?
We're picking it up right here. Yeah, they are picking 11th.
Yeah, so yep. Unless they know, like, if Kirk Cousins is going to be on the market in May when the draft, late April, probably. But I don't know. Maybe there's another team out there that really thinks he's healthy, and maybe the medicals on him, right? We talk a lot about medicals in the draft. I think the medicals on Kirk Cousins is going to impact where a lot of other teams pick quarterbacks. So if a Patriot or a Raider or a Viking decides Kirk's the guy, it changes the whole course of that top 15. And I mean, Flores with the defense, and you got Addison and Jefferson. I mean, Hockenson, I mean, they've got a stud roster. They just need the right guy to pull the trigger. And I don't know if Kirk's going to be healthy, but if he is, I think Minnesota's the team.
The only other team that I could see, and I'm not going to pick them, I'm going to go with the Vikings, sure, just as you as well, because I think it just makes too much sense for him to be a Minnesota Viking. And Kevin O'Connell said, quote, "I believe Kirk wants to be a Viking, and we're going to work to try to make that outcome. We've won a lot of games over these 2 years with Kirk as our quarterback, and I thought he was playing as well as anyone in the National Football League when he got hurt."
And he's right.
So, and he was right. Yeah. Like, he was, Cousins was playing the best football of, I thought, of his career.
100%.
Before the Achilles injury there. But the only other team that could offer something up to me would be Atlanta, potentially. Yeah. Just given the fact that I believe it was Robinson, who was the play caller for the Atlanta Falcons this upcoming year, came over from the Rams, that McVay system that Cousins has run under Kevin O'Connell. So I feel like that'd be kind of a seamless transition there for them. Like, okay, it's something that's a little bit similar for him in the Atlanta offense. But the rehab for Cousins that you're talking about, that's the biggest thing with this.
Agreed.
And why there's so much uncertainty. Yep.
Now, that's why he's going to be an unrestricted free agent for a significant amount of time. I mean, I don't know when he's going to be signed. I think Raiders and Falcons are teams that are going to be, I don't know what, but they are teams that are going to be very active. Like, they're the teams that you're going to hear in the news cycle consistently over the next 2 weeks, during the tampering period, during the free agent period. And then, of course, in, if they haven't made their quarterback mind up by then, in the week or so leading up to the draft, there's the smoke is fire, smoke and mirrors teams. You're going to hear a lot of stuff coming from those two camps, I think.
So neither of us said Pittsburgh for any of these three guys, Fields, Wilson, or Cousins.
I don't know how I feel about Pittsburgh's situation.
They're going to run it back with Pickett, Rudolph?
That's what they said, but I don't know if I believe it.
I don't believe it.
Let's leave it at this. I think you give Kenny another chance because he hasn't had a full season yet, but it's tough. I think it's tough because of the injuries, and he's now gotten hurt 2 years in a row.
Arthur Smith's the new play caller in Pittsburgh. And I, like, say what you will about Arthur Smith, the head coach, and there's a lot to say. But as an offensive play caller, he was pretty good in Tennessee.
I feel the same way about Staley as a defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Not head coach, but great defensive mind.
He had a good year with the Rams, Brandon Staley did. Now, I think, is he going to be on the Rams? The Niners staff, I think, is the
one of those.
Is associate head coach San Francisco? There we go. Brandon Staley in San Francisco with the Shanahans. How about that? All right. On the other side, we will wrap up the show with the today's slate in the association. Our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst, joins us next. Are the Celtics really head and shoulders above the rest of the Eastern Conference? We'll ask that question to JBT to wrap things up here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can deposit $5 and get a no-sweat bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet loses. Download the app and use promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Jared Smith filling in for Michael Lombardi. And joining us on the other side here in studio, our buddy Jonathan Von Tobel Vissen, senior NBA analyst, here to break down the association. Well, JVT, Jared and I were talking about this earlier in this hour. The Boston Celtics, they are a regular season juggernaut, sitting right now at 47-12. They play the Golden State Warriors later on today, 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific time. The betting market right now in the Eastern Conference, Boston's +105. Are the Celtics truly head and shoulders above the rest of the Eastern Conference, and maybe even the rest of the NBA, when you take a look at what they've done so far in this regular season?
I think the answer to that question right now is a soft yes, only because when you look at what we have watched up to this point, you know, there's no real team that has distinguished themselves. You know, Cleveland and Milwaukee are obviously there with the way that they've been playing in terms of a straight-up standpoint. And, like, we'll focus on Milwaukee for a second, obviously the second choice. They've won five straight. They've covered four of those games, pushed the other. The problem is you played Charlotte twice. You play Philly. You played Chicago. You got a good win against Minnesota when you came out of the break. But is this something where Milwaukee's legitimately turning it around, or are they picking off some of the weaker pieces on a schedule that, by the way, is about to get a lot tougher for Milwaukee? They got one of the hardest schedules left in the NBA as we enter the home stretch. So I think it's a soft yes. And I also think it's a soft yes because, and I think it's a very fair criticism, I was actually texting with Sam Panayotovich, who works over at Nesson, about this. The problems with Boston the last few years has been their crunch time offense. You know, when we have seen them fail in the postseason, it has been when games get tight, what happens to your half court offense? And it just devolves into ISO play with, you know, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And their crunch time numbers right now, the regular season, are incredible. Like, net rating, offense rating, defense rating, they're all great. But when you get to the postseason, are those issues going to be fixed? And I still have my questions about that. Jrue Holiday's awesome. Is Jrue Holiday going to make sure your offense is still flowing around? We've seen Jrue Holiday get cold quite a bit for Milwaukee in some of their postseason failures. Kristaps Porzingis gives you a half-court presence in terms of being able to post something up and do something different than you haven't had the last few years. So maybe that fixes it. So ultimately, I get down to the soft yes, because I think that right now, I want to see more out of Milwaukee against some of the bigger boys. Yeah. You know, you got a big win out of the All-Star break, but I want to see more and more consistently. And with Cleveland, all of a sudden, Donovan Mitchell's been in and out of the lineup post-All-Star break. Injury, illness, the results haven't really been there. Can you get that two seed and make your way to an Eastern Conference Finals? And even then, you're just playing the seeding game so you can avoid Boston. And then there's the big question, right, which is literally and figuratively Joel Embiid. Yeah. When is he going to come back? And if he does come back, how healthy does he make them? So I think right now it is a soft yes. And once we get to the postseason, we'll have some of those questions answered a little bit more, obviously.
Odds on for Boston to win the East when the playoffs start, you think? Or do you think that number moves down a little bit? Do you think we get an opportunity to buy them at a fair price?
I would tell you this. If it gets to odds on, I would bet the no, especially places here, right, that have a yes, no.
Sure.
Only because, like, look, it's hard to win in Eastern Conference Finals. And when you still have opponents, like we'll take the Bucks for example, even if Milwaukee, you know, goes through, still has some of the ebbs and flows that we saw in the first half of the season, you still have Giannis Antetokounmpo, and you still have Damian Lillard.
Yeah, right? That's pretty good.
And when you're talking about at the start of a postseason to be laying a price for a team to win its respective conference when you have to win three best of seven series, that's a lot to ask of a team. You think about it, you go back to all those years, the times that we saw the Golden State Warriors at the peak of their powers. At one point during the regular season, they flirted with odds on, and at some points it got to an odds on favorite, but you shouldn't be odds on to win your conference. This is not a team power rating wise on par with a team like Golden State when they were at their peak with Kevin Durant.
We're hanging out with Jonathan Von Tobel Vissen, senior NBA analyst, talking all things NBA here on the Lombardi Line. Not to make this Celtics hour here, JVT, but shout out to our Nesson audience. Can Joe Mazzulla run down Mark Daigneault for coach of the year? Like, if the Celtics win 66-67 games and are just one of the top 10 all-time regular season teams, is that enough to run down Mark Daigneault, who right now seems to be the apple of every NBA media member's eye?
No. I'll book it for you if you want, but I think when you
other
listen,
spots have already done it around town.
Well, I think, like, when you look at it too, so, like, I take in the important part about awards is you take in a lot of NBA media, you know, like NBA podcasts, things like that, guys and gals who shape the market and or might decide this with their votes. Yeah. And rightfully so, Mark Daigneault has a lot of respect here. Yeah. And he's a very good coach. That the little things that he does with his lineups, what he's starting to do with Josh Giddey and pulling him out of key situations so they can get more spacing on the floor, the way that this team defends at a very high level. And while he's got a really good piece in, say, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the narrative around OKC is that young team being shaped by their head coach outside of Shai. You know, with a guy like Joe Mazzulla, you've got a team that with a previous head coach made it to an NBA Finals. You are expected to be here. You are expected to be the one seed. I don't care if you win 74 games, right? If they get there, then maybe. But when you're talking about the expectation, we always talk about this like with when we're talking about Coach of the Year right in the NFL.
Yeah.
What is the expectation for your team? And the last 4 years now for the Boston Celtics, the expectation has been at the very least one or two seed and a conference finals appearance. And if you're just going to do that again, I find it hard to then look at a team like Oklahoma City, who is ahead of schedule because of what Mark Daigneault does, and taking it from him at that point.
That's a perfect transition to go from East to West, because I think the Western Conference, you know, unlike the East, the teams at the top of the West are unproven, right? They haven't been to the finals. They haven't won a title. Are those top two teams, Minnesota, OKC, are they tested enough, talented enough to run that gauntlet? Or is it a Phoenix, a Clippers, a Golden State? I know they're back in the pack, but these are obviously the pedigree teams in the Western Conference, but not having a great regular season.
Yeah, no, I think they're totally like legitimately contenders. Yeah. You know, when you take Oklahoma City, for example, not only do you have a very good head coach, you need a player like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to win an NBA title, right? We've seen it time and time again. And in any given series, he can be the best player on the floor, given the way that he can score. One of the low key things that I think the general public doesn't acknowledge with him, he is a phenomenal two-way player. He is a very good defender. And with him and with Lu Dort, those are great perimeter defenders to have in any single matchup that you're going to go out there. The problem with a team like Oklahoma City, you do lack a little bit of size, right? You know, congrats on going and getting Bismack Biyombo. He's not going to be playing minutes for you in the postseason. Gordon Hayward is going to give you a little bit of size on the wing, but he's not going to help you in that regard. So when you meet teams, let's say it's a Western Conference Finals between Minnesota and Oklahoma City, that overwhelming size is going to be a problem. Multiple wing defenders to throw at those guys. And then when it comes to Minnesota, again, and both teams, by the way, have lack of experience. But when it comes to Minnesota, overwhelming size, fantastic defensively. Where's your offense coming from? You're about 15th or 16th in non-garbage time offensive rating. You know, I like Monty Morris as a bench piece to really help spell Mike Conley, because you've really been looking for some guard minutes and some guard offense when you go to the bench. But outside of that, where is this offense coming from when it comes to crunch time? Because your offense is pretty mundane at this point right now. And so if you can't score and you run into teams that can spread you out a little bit, shoot over the top, and really make you try to keep up, can you do it? So I think if you nitpick any team, there's legitimate weaknesses. Yeah. But like, think with these two, if outside of those, yes, they are legitimate contenders. And if you were to tell me right now, either one of them won the Western Conference, I don't think anybody should be surprised by that.
The biggest weakness is just that we haven't seen it.
Right. Yep, exactly.
Yep. We just haven't recency seen it. Bias it is a hell
that,
of a drug.
It doesn't mean that they can't do it. They just haven't done it yet.
Well, it makes for a fascinating dynamic. Like you mentioned Golden State.
Yeah.
Well, Golden State wins the eighth seed and it's Minnesota Golden State in a first round matchup.
That's going to be one heck of a series.
From a matchup standpoint, with small ball spreading you out, going up and down the floor quick, and experience versus overwhelming size, it's going to suffocate you. Like it's so fascinating because the West is awesome. So, you know, I don't know how much experience plays out. You know, people will point to Sacramento Golden State last year. I'd say the broken index finger of De'Aaron Fox actually made a difference as opposed to experience. But I can't wait to see how it's going to play out.
And you don't see 8-over-1s in the NBA like ever. So would be like unprecedented.
We saw it last year. And then like that was the first time in 20 years.
Wasn't it Golden State Dallas?
Like I think it was 20 years.
That was way back. Hashtag we believe. Maybe they can restart that up since they're right now the 9th seed in the Western Conference. Your Clippers, JVT, they've lost 4 of their last 7. They're taking on the T-Wolves coming up a little bit later on today, this afternoon. Everything okay with the Clippers? Yeah. Is it just injuries or just hitting a little bit of a midseason lull here? What's going on?
No, I think there's a midseason lull, but I think there are some issues that you have to discuss here with this team. Like, for example, defensively, you should be better in that fourth quarter. Like, look, the fourth quarter against LeBron, that was LeBron. Like, he hits a million threes. That's pretty tough. Now, I will say the troubling part about that was Ty Lue willingly just allowing Daniel Tice to switch on to LeBron James every single possession.
That's less than ideal.
And letting him cook. But I'll say this. One of the low key things about like what coaches do here is, do you potentially test stuff out to see what's going to happen if you face that team in a postseason series? Can you get away with this if this is going to happen? Especially when you're a team like the Los Angeles Clippers or these others who do have some wiggle room. The top 4 seeds, there's a big cushion between them and the bottom seeds in the Western Conference. But still, a very bad loss nonetheless. And then you kind of look like, all right, we get a bad loss. We lost to Sacramento as well. Let's flex our muscles a bit. You crushed the Washington Wizards in the last time out, and you're good across the board. But you mentioned it. Paul George has been in and out. Ivica Zubac has been in and out. So this is now something where I think you're a little concerned, but let's get some continuity too with this roster, and let's see what's going to happen. Because remember, that loss to the Lakers, you were down 2 starters. And so like that's going to be something that's going to hold you back there a little bit.
Fill in the blank on March 3rd. The team that will win the NBA title will be?
I'll stick to my guns. The Los Angeles Clippers.
Going down with
he's
the
a
Clips.
Fan.
Clip City in the building. I mean, at the Western Conference, I can't wait to see these playoffs here.
Oh, it's going
to
be great.
The East Golden seems State is pretty ascending. Cut and dry. There's two teams, and I don't know if
once
there's
you get
really
to the semis
else.
In the East, yeah. like you'll get, but yeah. like from the get, the play in on the West is going to be awesome.
The West is going to be wars. I mean, we're going to get the Lakers in an elimination, like 9-10 game.
The Lakers Warriors in an elimination playing game would be pretty crazy. I'll tell you that.
Might break all of Twitter. That does it for us here on the Lombardi Line. Thank you to our producer, Elliot Bowman, behind the glass, and the entire crew, for Jonathan Von Tobel for joining us here in studio. Check him out at the top of the hour. The handle, he and Mike Somich here. For Jared Smith, I'm Femi Bebefe saying good luck with all the bets. We'll see you guys next week here on the Lombardi Line.